Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
It's In This League.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Come again.
With Scott Bogman and Chris Welsh.
Can't wait.
What does that do? Does that blow your mind?
That just happened.
Welcome in. It's In This League on the Sports Grid. Get on the grid. I'm your host, Scott Bogman. Follow me on Twitter at Bogman Sports. And I'm here with Nicholas Allen, the owner and proprietor of CFB Winning Edge. Follow him on the Twitter at CFB Winning Edge. And today, we're going to be talking a little CFF, and we're going to be going by conference, the SEC. We recently did the SEC on Nick's podcast, the CFB Winning Edge podcast, so check that out. We did the all-SEC preseason team. And we did a nice section called Who's Next. We kind of stole the idea from the old ESPN The Magazine article from Who's Next. We had some of that with Xavier as well. And that was a lot of fun. So I figured we'd make corresponding shows here. We can talk about some of the talent in the SEC. And it's a good place to start, isn't it, Nick?
Absolutely. I mean, it's first up on my list. Pretty much anything that I add to our, you know, all of our things at CFB Winning Edge, for whatever reason, the SEC is always just what I start with. Maybe it's from where I grew up or just, you know, considered by most to be the strongest league out there. So I certainly agree it's a good starting point.
Yeah, it's the SEC is just littered with talent, of course. But, I mean, doing that show was a lot of fun as well. But the Welsh and I, and we recorded it before you and I recorded for the Saturday show. And we started talking about, there was a tweet that went out, and I don't know if it's been corroborated or if it's just rumors right now, but it spread like wildfire that the NFL is considering putting games on Saturday if there's no college football played this season. So we're going to talk about that a little bit tomorrow for everyone who's listening. But Nick, I wanted to get your opinion on, you know, the potential of college football not being played this year. I mean, I know that it has to exist in the realm of possibility, right? But we have to put NFL football and pretty much every sport in that basket as a possibility. But what would you say the odds of getting a college football going for 2020 are right now?
I think getting college football in 2020 is probably more likely than not. I don't know if I'm willing to go much higher than, you know, 51-49 or 60-40, something like that. Right. But I know there are a lot of people who are very, very motivated to play this college football season. There's, of course, so many unknowns, and there are a lot of potential, you know, opportunities to be creative, could potentially push it into the spring of 2021. And you know, a lot of ideas are being thrown around right now, a lot of possibilities. But I think it's probably more likely than not that we'll get college football in some form or fashion. I'm just not sure if it'll look like, you know, what we normally think of as college football, 12 games per team and you know, non-conference games, things like that. We might see a smaller season, might see the schedule change up a little bit. If I were to guess, I think there's probably also a better chance of that happening than not. But if for some reason that the NFL is able to get started earlier than college football, which I do think is probably fairly likely. I think if we push college football back a little bit, I still think there is a good chance the NFL starts on time, partly because they're professionals and you can sort of, you know, ask professionals to do things that it's a bit maybe taboo to ask quote-unquote amateurs to do. So I think NFL football, you know, if it's going on and college is delayed, it makes sense to me to play some games on Saturdays and in the playoffs when college is, you know, taking a break before the bowl games or even during bowl season, right? We'll see NFL playoff games on Saturdays. That seems to make sense. There's certainly going to be plenty of people who we'll watch the NFL anytime it's on, whenever it's on. And if there's, you know, not something competing against it on Saturday, I think it certainly makes sense. And I would welcome it if we don't have college football. And I pay very little attention to the NFL most of the time. But if it's here in September and college football's not, I most definitely will be, you know, tuning in.
Now, how many Welsh and I get into this, so I'm not going to give you where I stood on either side because I don't want to sway you and I don't want people to think I'm leading you into this question. But what do you think if California keeps this order of not being able to play games in California, and they could skirt it by not putting fans in the stands and stuff like that, but let's just say they stick with no sports are going to happen in California until 2021. What do you do with those Pac-12 teams like Cal and Stanford, UCLA, USC, just all those teams, you know, and even the smaller schools, Fresno State, San Diego State, that are in California? Are they going to have to go, are they just not going to play this year, or do you think they'll have like satellite campuses? What do you think would happen should that stick?
The first thing that popped into my mind was that we might see split seasons almost, where I did see that the commissioner of the SEC, you know, said, hey, if some conferences can play, if some teams can play and others can't, then there's nothing to say that we have to wait for everybody. So right. I could almost see the Pac-12 kind of marches to the beat of its own drummer a lot of the time anyway. Yeah. I could certainly see, you know, them and maybe some other conferences that whether it's in a cooler climate, there seems to be some, you know, temperature might play a part in getting things going and win and whatnot. But maybe there's a smaller selection of teams that decides that they need to wait until the spring. And maybe it's not everybody that has a spring season, but maybe the Pac-12 is one of those that does. And you know, they already play nine conference games, so perhaps they would just move to the spring and just do some sort of round robin or conference games only, something like that. I you know, it certainly wouldn't be ideal. You would like to have everybody going at the same time, but that's the first thing that popped in my mind, because I don't think if there's just one league that's going to be a holdout, or even if there's, you know, two or three, with the Mountain West, like you mentioned, being impacted, I don't necessarily see everybody else waiting around.
Okay, and that was that's interesting, leading into what the Welsh and I discuss tomorrow. So, you know, sorry to leave everybody hanging, but we had it's in reverse order, I understand, but we had the discussion, and I had to, you know, we're talking to a college football expert. Why wouldn't I ask you this question? So we had, like I said, we had a lot of fun doing the preseason all-SEC teams, and we had some different answers. I mean, particularly, we're not going to talk about defense here on this show. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about the defenses as far as fantasy goes, but we're not going to go over them specific players in this show. So if you want to listen to that side of the ball, we talk a lot about that on the CFB Winning Edge podcast. So listen to that if you would. But let's start out at quarterbacks in the SEC here, Nick. And, I mean, you are you're the biggest proponent of KJ Costello that we've seen. We've already talked about him on this show because you had him. Where did you have him overall in quarterbacks? Was it like two or three?
It was pretty high up there early on. And part of that is because I've seen KJ Costello do some good things at Stanford. I think he somewhat was a little bit underrated for his performance in 2018. 2019, of course, he had injuries, and Stanford was just not quite, you know, it was a little bit off last year, struggled quite a bit. But I have seen, you know, quarterbacks produce in Mike Leach systems. I know that it's his first year, but I keep coming back to, we've seen Mike Leach get a first-time starter ready to go each of the last, you know, couple of years, and have had great seasons, excellent seasons. It seems to be a system that he can install quickly, that quarterbacks are able to get a hold of fairly quickly and operate up to full speed by time the season starts and you know, get rolling. And KJ Costello, being a former, you know, high four-star, fringe five-star quarterback coming into college, is arguably the most talented quarterback Mike Leach has ever had. He's an NFL prototype player. He's somebody that, leading into the 2019 season, David Shaw, the head coach at Stanford, said, we don't expect to have KJ Costello in 2020 because he's going to be off in the NFL. And so Things obviously, you know, took a bit of a turn. He ends up not going into the draft, but transfers to Mississippi State. But I think as someone with his raw talent, with his skill set, and with a system that has a track record of success, but also with him being, you know, he's a smart guy. He's going to be able to pick it up quickly. And I certainly expect, as long as he stays healthy, that he will put up huge numbers.
He went to Stanford. He's a smart guy.
Right, for sure. So I know there is some debate, and I brought this up actually in the chat. I was really annoying the other day in a slow draft, and just started just throwing questions out, and one of them was basically like, I don't understand, because Chevin Cordero went ahead of KJ Costello in this draft, and I think Costello was something like the 17th or 18th. Quarterback, and that was by far the earliest I'd seen Cordero go, and I think maybe somebody just didn't realize that Nick Rolovich isn't at Hawaii anymore. But I was kind of like, I don't get it. Why are you guys so low on Costello? Is it just and the debate I've heard most is, you know, is it just SEC defenses? You don't think that, you know, this is going to work in the SEC, and that seemed to be, you know, people kind of said, yeah, I think that's part of it. And then people also said, well, I wasn't really, you know, impressed with Costello last year, which I guess is fair, but also I, you know, he was hurt. Right. But I do think it's going to succeed in the SEC. I mean, you know, we've seen what LSU did last year, and I'm not saying Mississippi State's going to have LSU type numbers, but we've seen an offensive system and talented players be able to put up huge point totals and yardage totals against SEC defenses very recently. Things have changed a lot in the last few years, and so I could be wrong.
Last year, I just want to hit this point home real quick. Last year, Joe Burrow second in the nation in fantasy points per game, and he's playing against SEC defenses all the time, 35.75. And your argument for KJ Costello going into a Mike Leach system, Anthony Gordon, 31.78 points per game last year, third overall behind Hurts and Burrow only, and that's in a Mike Leach system. So you're kind of combining those 2 points. You know, Tua was in here over at 8 overall in the SEC. Who was next? After that, I mean, we dropped down a little bit, but there can be many, many. Jamie Newman, who wasn't in the SEC, but he's at Wake Forest, he averaged 26 points a game last year too. So there's both of those sides that you just talked about, where yes, people can perform well in the SEC if they're good enough, and Mike Leach's offense produces guys that are top end almost every single year. So I completely understand why Costello's in your top 10, and I don't really see why. Like, are you getting more people saying, what are you doing ranking Costello that high, or more people just saying, well, I like him, but I like these guys much more?
Well, I think I'm a little bit curious as to why it's not much of a talking point. I mean, I was certainly, you know, the article that our friend John put up a few weeks ago, and we talked about previously, I was much higher on Costello than pretty much everybody there. And any mock I've done so far, he's been, you know, in the mid-teens and sometimes in the 20s when he's picked, and I just don't get it. But it's not really something that has come up very much. It's just I don't know if he's flying under the radar. I don't know if people are just scared that it's a first-time head coach in a new league and a step up in competition, and he's also a transfer. I mean, I understand there are a lot of moving parts, and normally, you know, the I would be wary of a first-time head coach and a first-time quarterback.
He went to Stanford.
I get,
he's smart
right,
enough.
But I think this you know, I just think everything fits perfectly in this puzzle. So maybe I'm just higher on KJ Costello than everybody. Maybe he's one that I'm willing to take the risk for the potential reward when in other situations I might not be.
Right.
And, you know, I could be wrong. Absolutely. I've been wrong before and will be wrong again. But hopefully, you know, maybe I'll get some value on KJ Costello this year, and hopefully it'll pay off.
Yeah, I really think it will. And, you know, it's funny because you look at the SEC, and I know we're going to have to cross over into the next segment, of course, we're talking about this, Nick, but you've got Jamie Newman at 17 overall, Miles Brennan at 22. So Jamie Newman, you know, is only, in your eyes, a startable quarterback if you're in a, you know, like an 18 or 20 man league. So there's no other real starters, which makes a lot of sense because, I mean, what are there 10 conferences plus independents, right, Nick? So, I mean, you're going to get about one, you know, one to two per conference here, but it is a fairly big step down from KJ Costello to everyone else in this conference, correct?
In my eyes, and I'm going to sound like a complete hypocrite here, but I am worried because Jamie Newman is a transfer because he's got a new play caller, and it's just the
But they run a completely different thing at Georgia, and it's way more pro set, which is right. less indicative sure. for fantasy, and KJ Costello is going to a spread offense, which is way better for fantasy, so that's also understandable.
Sure, and there's optimism behind the change at Georgia. They've hired Todd Monken, who was at Tampa Bay in recent years, and so there's some hope that, hey, maybe this is a move that'll be similar to what we saw at LSU with Joe Brady, get an NFL guy in and mix things up and put Newman in a chance to be successful, and I certainly hope for it. But for me, there are more unknowns there than there are with Mike Leach and KJ Costello, and also Jamie Newman. He had a great year last year, but he has never started a full season. He's either been hurt or he lost the job in fall camp, or he's had, I believe a couple of years ago, he was in the doghouse with the coaching staff for a bit. So, I've seen Costello in a full season. I've seen Leach for decades, yeah. and Newman and Georgia and Monken. There's a lot more sort
more
of cloudiness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, look at us, jinx. Cloudiness, gray area. Yeah, great minds think alike. But I tell you what, there's we probably won't do this with every conference, but there's a ton of quarterbacks I actually want to talk about here. So when we come back, we will talk, finish off this quarterback talk from the SEC and move on to running backs where you know you're going to get some monsters. So stick with us. It's In This League on the Sports Grid. We'll be right back after this.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
In This League.
I'm back!
Welcome back. It's In This League on the Sports Grid. Get on the grid. I am here with my friend Nick Allen talking CFF in the SEC. We did a corresponding show on the CFB Winning Edge podcast where we broke down the All-SEC preseason team. And I figured we'd just take it over here to the fantasy side on the Sports Grid. Now, Nick, real quick, before we get rolling back into these quarterbacks, plug everything that you're doing at CFB Winning Edge and pump the Patreon and all that stuff.
Yeah, we've got a lot of college football information available to our patrons. We've done individual player ratings for over 10,000 FBS players across 130 FBS teams. We've got coach ratings, coordinator ratings. We dive deep into the numbers and try to help project both individual performances and also, of course, team performances. We do projected point spreads and win totals, all that good stuff. So we've got a ton of information available. Anybody who's interested in accessing that can learn more at patreon.com/CFB Winning Edge.
So we're talking about the SEC quarterbacks. We talked about Costello. We talked about Jamie Newman, who you still have second in this conference, even though, you know, you're a little wary on him because transfer, new system going on at Georgia. There's a lot going on. KJ Costello stepping into a Mike Leach offense that is more indicative for fantasy. Anyway, that's why we're high on him. But the rest of these guys, I mean, Miles Brennan has great targets in Terrace Marshall and Jamar Chase. And Mac Jones at Alabama has got Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle, guys that are supposed to be going in the draft. Kellen Mond is a big quarterback, according to draft pundits. He threw 20 scores last year. John Reese Plumlee had over 1,000 yards on the ground. And Bo Nix and the potential for Bryce Young to start at Alabama. You know, and we have even more guys here. I mean, Kyle Trask from Florida stepped in for Felipe Franks. It was actually really good, surprisingly good, I thought. Sean Robinson was a big-time recruit at TCU who wound up transferring and sitting behind Kelly Bryant at Missouri. There's a lot of talent here in the SEC, and there's even guys I didn't mention down there that are worthy of watching. I don't think of drafting. You know, some of these guys are going to be backups, like Brandon Mac Jones, Plumlee, and Mond are probably all decent backups to draft, third quarterbacks if you're in a 2QB league, stuff like that. But I guess who has the highest upside outside of Costello and Newman in the SEC, in your opinion, at quarterback?
Well, in my personal rankings, I've got Miles Brennan as my 22nd quarterback, one spot ahead of Mac Jones. And I think the reason for that, one, we saw what LSU did last year. And I'm not saying Miles Brennan is Joe Burrow, and I know there's some coaching turnover there and, of course, roster turnover. But I do feel confident that they'll be able to carry over the offensive system that they had last year. Miles Brennan has been on campus there for 3 years already. He was highly recruited, a mid to high four-star guy coming out of high school. He's played in 17 games. You're a little bit worried because, you know, they did bring in a transfer instead of having him compete for the job in 2018. And then there was some discussion earlier, you know, this spring and late winter about, well, will they bring in a grad transfer again? Is Miles Brennan really going to be the guy? So there are some concerns, but I think that because they have not brought in a transfer, Ed Orgeron, the head coach, has said repeatedly that, you know, how much they like Brennan. He's the quarterback. There's only a true freshman really on the depth chart behind him. I think he's pretty likely to start. And based on what LSU did last year, I think there's a good chance, not that he's going to put up the numbers that Joe Burrow put up, but that he's going to put up fantasy relevant numbers. And Mac Jones is in a very similar situation, quite honestly. But I think that what gives me just a slight bit more comfortability with Brennan, yeah, is that Bryce Young is potentially going to be breathing down Mac Jones's neck, and Bryce Young is, you know, he's a true freshman, number one overall player, according to 247 Sports, and the number two or three player in the 247 composite. And, you know, some of the talent evaluators there that I really trust their opinion just have absolutely raved about the touch that Young throws with, you know, his command, his accuracy, all those words that just tell you how special of a passer he is. And Mac Jones certainly has an edge in experience. He got a chance to get his feet wet last year with Tua going down and played well for the most part, really had some explosive numbers. But, you know, in big moments, he had some really huge gaffes. I mean, threw two pick sixes against Auburn that basically was the difference in that game. And if they were able to win that game, might have still been able to make it into the playoffs. So there's a little bit of a concern there, but I think that Mac Jones at this point, because Alabama was shut out of spring practice, and because we don't know what the situation is going to be this summer or this fall, I think there's a better chance now of Mac Jones being able to be the starter and then potentially establish himself as the starter, hold off Young at least for a while. I was pretty confident that Young would be the starter by the end of the year if, you know, in a perfect world, in a normal 2020 college football situation. But because of, you know, the situation we're in right now with everything on pause, I think there's a little bit better chance of Jones getting in there. They're both, you know, Brennan and Jones, they're both not perfect, but they have huge upside. And I think that's sort of the situation we're in here in the SEC quarterback-wise. And really, I think at the quarterback position from a CFF standpoint across the country, I think we're, you know, if we do this with all different conferences, I think we'll have some very similar conversations, because there seem to be a small selection of elite guys that we feel confident that these are going to be studs. And then there's kind of a fat middle where, you know, maybe there's high ceiling guys that you're just not super confident in, but if they hit, they have an opportunity to hit really big.
It's like pitching in baseball. Pitching has always kind of been like that. I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's kind of what it is. It's, you have your upper echelon guys, and then our buddy Paul Spohr from Fangraphs always called the middle tiers the glob. You know, you have your upper echelon guys who you know are studs, and then you have a glob of maybes. You know, and I think that Mac Jones and a lot of these guys, you know, new coaching staff coming in at Ole Miss, Kellen Mond missing a lot of weapons now, Bo Nix, you know, taking a step up. Can he? I mean, 18 points a game last year is fine as a freshman, but like we were talking about, you need to get into those, you know, at least mid-20s to really start making an impact every single week, you know, because the top 25, you know, top 20, Jamie Newman averaged 26 points a game last year. And you have huge college football names in here outside of that on a per-game basis. You know, Asher O'Hara, Justin Fields, Tua, Caleb Evans, Derek King, Sam Ellinger. You know, those are all huge names. Now, when we go to running backs, Nick, the running backs in the SEC, obviously, a lot of fun to watch because the upper echelon talent is here. Najee Harris, you have in the top 10. Same thing with Kylan Hill. As far as RB2s go, you know, Isaiah Spiller's kind of on the borderline, you know, ranked at 13. Is he a 2 or 1? It depends on how big your league is. But then Jerrion Ealy and maybe Larry Roundtree, the third from Missouri, are in there as well. So, I mean, Najee Harris, where overall are you taking Najee Harris? Is he, because he's your top-ranked running back out of Alabama, is he a mid-first-round pick, late first-round pick? Where do you see him going?
So for me personally, I think Najee Harris, if I'm picking at the very tail end of the first round in a pretty big league, I prefer leagues that are 12 to 20 teams. So in that, you know, 15 range, I'm ready to take Najee Harris, because pretty much the top, you know, four elite running backs are going to be off the board. And I think Harris is not quite in that very top tier, but I think he's very close. I personally this year am going heavy wide receiver early. So if I'm not getting one of those elite running backs, I'm probably taking receivers with both of those, you know, first two picks. But if, you know, some of the big guys, again, are gone, like if I'm at the very end of the first round in a big league, I certainly would consider Harris, because I know he's not going to come back to me in the second in that situation. So I think he's close to elite, but I think the concern that a lot of people have, and understandably, is Alabama is absolutely just stocked with talent at the running back position. There, you know, there's another senior, Brian Robinson, who's done some good things, and there's absolutely coming off an injury. Jace McClellan was almost as highly rated coming out of high school as Sanders. So they are absolutely just stocked with talent. And I think Harris is going to be the clear number one and get a heavy, heavy workload. I loved what he did as a receiver out of the backfield last year. I think that's certainly something that makes him, you know, close to an elite running back. But, you know, there is a slight concern because in the past we've seen sometimes Alabama will spread the ball around at the running back position. Sometimes they'll lean on somebody like Derrick Henry. I think there's a chance that Najee Harris gets that sort of workload, but I could also see scenarios where a lot of those really, really talented guys deserve some carries as well.
Second most catches among running backs returning to the SEC as well, behind Isaiah Spiller at 29. Najee Harris had 27. Now, Kylan Hill, big year last year, 242 rushes, 1,350 yards, 10 scores, 18 catches for 180 and a score as well. Moving to that Mike Leach offense, and look, we've seen guys be unbelievably productive. I mean, Max Borgi last year was huge, especially in a PPR league for running backs. I mean, he was just an absolute monster. Kylan Hill, I don't know if he has that type of upside. I mean, Max Borgi last year averaged, you know, almost 25 points a game. He was eighth overall as far as scoring goes. Do you see that type of upside on Kylan Hill? I mean, you have him really high.
I do, and I think that I think he does have that very high potential. I think he's a better football player than Max Borgi, and I think that as a runner, you know, last year he proved how productive he could be in a more of a run heavy offense, ran for 1300 yards, 10 touchdowns, average 5.6 yards per carry. So we know what he can do with the ball in his hands, but he only got 18 receptions last year, only scored once on that, you know, on that end. And so I love his running ability. I know he's not going to get as many carries this year, but I do believe that with Mike Leach and KJ Costello, he's going to get a lot of checkdowns, a lot of opportunities, you know, on angle routes and screens and all sorts of things. I think they're going to put the ball in his hands a lot, because something I didn't get to, my only concern really with KJ Costello is the Mississippi State receiving core. And it's not that, you know, Washington State or even before that Texas Tech had super, super talented wideouts. I mean, Michael Crabtree is the only one that really comes to mind as somebody that was that was just, you know, that sort of level above, sort of just a guy. And Mississippi State right now doesn't necessarily blow me away with their receiving talent. I think that could be a good thing for Hill. I think that there's a chance that we see Hill put up the receiving numbers that Borgi put up, and I think that there's also a chance maybe he runs the ball a little bit more than Borgi. That's pure speculation, but that combination is why I'm a believer in Kylan Hill, sort of in that similar to Harris. I mean, he's one spot behind him in my overall ranking. So I think there's certainly an opportunity for Hill to put up really nice numbers this year.
Now, we got to go quick here. We got about 2 minutes left in this segment, but between Ely, Roundtree, White, and I know you like Rakeem Boyd too, if they all hit their top end potential, is that the same order that you would have them? Or if they're all hitting their top end potential, maybe Zamir White is one ahead of Ely. How would you rank those guys if they're all hitting their ceiling?
I think you're right. I think if they all are the best player that they can be in 2020, Zamir White's probably going to be the number one. I think that there's more competition for carries at Georgia than there is at Ole Miss. White's also bigger. Ely is under 200 pounds, and he's a speed guy, but he's not huge, and he's not going to be a workhorse kind of back. White has an opportunity to be that if he were called upon. He's got the size and the ability to really carry the load for Georgia. So I think that he could be you know, probably a top two or three running back in the conference for sure. I mean, you know, both you and Xavier, I believe, put him in your all SEC team ahead of Kylan Hill when we were talking the other day. So I certainly agree that if, you know, everything were to click, he's got an opportunity to be that next guy. I just know that they really like James Cook, like to get him involved. Kenny McIntosh is very talented. Kendall Milton was one of the most talented running backs in the country at the high school level, who signed this most recent year. So similar to what we're talking about Alabama, but with a little less, you know, Zamir White's a little less established than Najee Harris.
It's definitely open this year. I just like Zamir White because, you know, the running backs at Georgia, you know, Harrion got drafted or signed as a UDFA, and Swift are gone. So your two top two producers are gone, and White is coming in with that pedigree and stuff. I think he's going to get the first shot, but that's what makes drafting some of these running backs risky out of SEC teams, because they have so much talent. But we got to hit a break. When we come back, we're going to talk wide receivers, because the SEC is chock filled with wide receiver talent, and it's the hardest to figure out in college fantasy football. Stick with us. We'll be right back in this league on the Sports Grid.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice, we play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
In this league.
I thought we were going to be just friends.
What? Friends listen to
In This League.
In the dark.
Welcome back. It's In This League on the Sports Grid. You guys can hear Endless Love. You know what that means. It is the last segment of our show, but please check out all of our work. You know, I'm doing stuff. Obviously, the Welsh and I own In This League. InThisLeague.com will take you to our Patreon. Our Patreon over there, we have, I just did a fantasy football dynasty rankings. I did the top 150, and I did each by position, going way down. I'm with the 200 wide receivers. I was like Nick on those wide receivers. I added in the rookie classes, of course, so that moves some guys up and some guys down. So we have that available starting today, the first. On there, I have the first-year player draft rookie rankings. If you're just in a rookie draft, I have that up there as well. Those rankings, we do secret shows twice a month for all of our patrons. That starts at the $5 level. The Welsh is doing baseball stuff, top 500 minor league prospects, and now he's adding you know, profiles to them. So that's pretty awesome. And just all kinds of stuff. Group me rooms if you're a lieutenant or higher. And all kinds of goodies over at patreon.com/ITL Army. And please check out all of Nick's work on his Patreon as well. CFB Winning Edge, patreon.com/CFB Winning Edge. Like I said, man, it's hard to find a depth chart for college football. Just nobody has them. They're all old, or they update them once a month or something. Nick is, and I say this with love, a psychopath. And he is an absolute psychopath when it comes to updating his depth chart and all of the graphs and sheets that you have at CFB Winning Edge. So, I mean, it's all there for you right there. It's the best depth chart I've ever seen. They're tough to come by. I mean, I like our lads, but they're lackadaisical on their college stuff. Football stuff, they're great. But the college stuff, they're just a little bit behind. Nick has all of that stuff for you, and it's not expensive. Go to CFB Winning Edge. Or patreon.com/CFBWinningEdge and check all the stuff out. Now we're on SEC wide receivers here, Nick. We probably didn't get to talk about as many running backs as you want, but you know we have limited time here. Jamar Chase, absolute stud. Your number two wide receiver in this class. We all knew that. We talked about Devontae Smith being at five overall when we talked a little bit early about the top guys. But moving down here a little bit, Jalen Waddle is 10 overall for you. And then we have a little bit of a fall off. And Pickens falls down a little bit. He came on huge for your Bulldogs at the end of the year, wound up with 49 catches, 727 yards, and 8 scores. And I'm going to I think that most of that was in the second half. I could be mistaken, but I think most of it, I just remember watching him a lot in the second half. And then Terrace Marshall for LSU, who was great last year. I mean, the dude scored 13 touchdowns. He had 671 yards and 46 catches on a loaded LSU team. You know, I mean, that those type of numbers, you know, the Georgia wasn't loaded with wide receivers. So for Pickens to come away as the main dude, that was awesome. But Terrace Marshall was kind of third or fourth fiddle, and he still wound up with all those touchdowns. So do they have this upside, really, the Alabama and LSU wideouts with their quarterbacks leaving?
I think so. I mean, just real quick on Jalen Waddle, I was surprised I saw someone, and I forget who it was exactly, but, you know, that the NFL draft guys are already looking ahead to 2021. Yeah. I saw some, you know, somebody posted a tweet with a video of Jalen Waddle highlights, and another draft guy responded with wide receiver one, and that surprised me, I will say. I love Jalen Waddle. If he's going to be, you know, climbing up all the way potentially to be the top guy off the board, I will be surprised, but I would also love it because he's one of my favorite players to watch. George Pickens, I think I'm a little lower on him than most, and I agree that people, you know, you remember the last thing that you saw, and Pickens came on huge in the Sugar Bowl against Baylor, and he did have other big games.
Did he have like 14 catches in that game or something?
Something ridiculous. Yeah, it was he had 12 catches, 175 yards, and just one touchdown. But that was his fourth straight game with a touchdown. And then against Missouri, sort of started his sort of coming on in the second half. He had two touchdowns and five catches, probably his second best game of the year. And he was great. And he's a five-star, you know, five-star wideout. Proved himself over the course of the year. We saw development, saw growth. He did lack some maturity. He was suspended for the first half of the SEC championship game because he got in a fight in the Georgia Tech game in the season finale, and was also suspended at the beginning of the Georgia Tech game. So had a little immaturity issues to work through. Hopefully if he gets that squared away, the talent is there, and we've certainly seen what he can do when Georgia makes an emphasis, you know, makes it a priority to get him the football. And there's certainly hope that they will do that with the new offense this year. I think just a tiny bit more skeptical than some. I think that perhaps people are weighing the bowl game performance a little too much. It was great to see, but I'm a little bit hesitant. You know, that was his only 100-yard game. That was his only game where he had more than seven receptions. So, you know, I like to see a little bit more, but he's absolutely got the upside. For Terrace Marshall, 36 might be a little low. I mean, I focus first and foremost on guys that I know are going to be the top target, and that's going to be Ja'Marr Chase, and he's an elite player, probably would have been the first receiver taken this year, maybe, if he were eligible to go for the draft. I think he'd certainly be in the conversation. So it's a little bit difficult for me to take a guy who's probably has to be a second wide receiver. Of course, he was. I mean, you listed his production last year, and he's certainly capable of that and more with Justin Jefferson gone. Going back to our past conversation, though, if you're a little bit concerned about Miles Brennan, then I think you have to be a little bit concerned about the second, you know, the guy who's get the second amount of targets in that offense. So perhaps I'm a little low on Marshall. I think he certainly is incredibly talented. I mean, he's got good size. He was a five-star coming out of high school, has experience and has production. So he's certainly worthy.
The numbers that he had last year, because the numbers are great, 671 yards and 13 touchdowns. It's just a ton. But that only netted him on a per-game basis as the 67th wide receiver. So do you think he can, with Brennan, match those numbers? I mean, obviously not the touchdown numbers. I wouldn't think anyone would expect that. But now that he becomes kind of the second option behind Chase instead of the third or fourth, because Justin Jefferson was there and Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Thaddeus Moss and all those guys, Stephen Sullivan, are all gone to the NFL now, do you think he's going to put up better overall numbers than last year, just maybe more catches and more yards and fewer scores?
I think potentially, and you know, he could match that touchdown total. It's going to be difficult. You don't just pencil in 13 touchdowns, I think, for anybody, but he certainly could be a 75 reception guy, 1,000 or 1,200 yard receiver. So I think absolutely he could be, you know, worthy of a top 20 type type year. But I know Chase is going to get sort of the lion's share, at least I feel that way, unless something unexpected happens. It seems that Marshall's going to be a clear number two. And just, you know, for me, I'm a little more conservative when it comes to taking a guy that I know is going to be the second option.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you there. The rest of these guys, I mean, you kind of had to pick one of the guys from Mississippi State. If you're going to have Costello that high, one of these guys is going to have to, ball out here. And you're banking on Osiris Mitchell, 29 catches, 430 yards and 6 scores last year. And then just moving down a little bit among the SEC, you have a Missouri wideout in Damon Hazleton in there just after Osiris Mitchell. Then Seth Williams from Auburn and Jamon Osbon from A&M and Shai Smith from South Carolina. So the top end of these guys, let's kind of do like we did for the running backs. If each one of them is hitting their ceiling, it's probably Osiris Mitchell, and it's not very close, right?
I think so. And Mitchell is experienced. He's big. He's listed at 6'5", 210. He's started 24 games. He's a well-developed football player. And if he finds a home and finds a role that is the number one target in a Mike Leach air raid offense, he's got an opportunity to have a huge year. Just one thing that we've seen a little bit, especially at Washington State, is they spread the ball around quite a bit. And I think the most productive receiver they had last year was Brandon Arcanato, who, you mentioned, I've got what I would agree are among the best step charts available to the public. And he wasn't even listed on them in my preseason depth chart. So we never really know who's going to step up and be the guy. I just think if you have to sort of zero in on one at this point, Osiris Mitchell, based on his track record, his experience, and also his size, and he's shown some things in the past, seems to be the guy that's got the best chance.
Yeah, I mean, I like him a lot, too. We may have to bring Trey Knox up on the list, because I've been he sent out a tweet the other day that said he wants to start a podcast, so I've been in the DMs with him a little bit recently, so we'll have to see if we get a response from him. But anyone else that you kind of think has more potential upside, or you wanted to move a little bit higher and you couldn't just do it? I know you really like Kadarius Toney, but he's more fun to watch than a CFF option, right?
Yeah, and he's my 98th receiver. And I think I just realized or noticed in one of my leagues that he's been moved to running back, which I don't know if I agree with. But, he's an athlete. He's an offensive weapon. He's a guy that they move around a lot. So it's understandable. They want to get him the ball. And that's I like players like that. He's not Rondale Moore, but he plays a role similar to that, where he'll get carries, he'll get bubble screens, he'll get, you know, they'll design trick plays for him. He makes plays in special teams that I just love to see. So he's just a personal favorite. But yeah, I'm not 100% sure if he's going to get enough targets to really make a major impact. I'm intrigued by Trevin Grimes, who probably is going to be the number one receiver at Florida. Florida's receiving corps last year was excellent. I mean, they were the number one rated unit in our unit rankings for receivers, and that includes Alabama, who had two of the top, first round draft picks. Florida had, four guys who are now, signed to NFL teams. I think three guys got drafted and one signed as an undrafted free agent. And, they didn't utilize them quite as well as they should. And now sort of the one holdover, other than tight end Kyle Pitts, is Grimes. So I think that there's a good chance for him to become, kind of that number one target type guy and get a lot more, get a lot more receptions, a lot more yards and touchdowns than Florida had last year, when they were so talented that they were spreading the ball around so much. So I think he's got an opportunity to move up this list. I've heard a little bit of buzz about Shai Smith, who I've got ranked 66th. I know there's optimism for South Carolina, and we didn't get to Ryan Helinski in the quarterback situation, but I think that's worth considering if you're going to create some buzz for a South Carolina wide receiver based on their new offensive coordinator, Mike Bobo, and what he did at Colorado State as the head coach there, you have to think a little bit, well, isn't Helinski going to get a bump maybe because of that? So Shai Smith, certainly I could see it. The only issue is most of those receivers that Bobo had at Colorado State who really sort of blew up were big body type guys. Warren Jackson last year being the most, you know, recent example. Shai Smith's a 5'10", 180 type guy. He's shifty. He's, you know, somebody who's going to work out of the slot a lot, or, you know, you're not going to really see him go up for jump balls or be a big time target in the red zone. You're going to have to hope that he catches a pass over the middle, breaks the tackle and takes it the distance. And certainly he could do that, but I don't know that he fits the prototype that I would be looking for.
Yeah, people expect him to be Debo, Brian Edwards, and he's not there. I'm excited
Brian
about
Edwards
him.
Was 6'3", 210 or right. something. You know, that's not Shai Smith. So exactly. I think he'll be a great player. I just don't I think I'm lower on him than most, though I do like it.
I just like a number one. But we only have about 2 minutes left. And I know you want to gush about Kyle Pitts. So,
oh, he's the best.
I mean, you have two top 10 tight ends coming out of the SEC, and Kyle Pitts from Florida and Jalen Weidermeyer from Texas A&M. So anything you want to say about them real quick before we go here?
Kyle Pitts is the best tight end in college football. He's a wide receiver that plays tight end. He's going to get a lot of targets. If I were to be low, you know, part of the reason I'm hesitant to pull the trigger on Grimes is because I think Pitts is going to be probably the number one target for Florida in 2020. And I do take a little bit of credit. The last draft I was in, one of Mike Bainbridge's drafts, and he's big on Granson at SMU as the number one tight end, and had been every mock I'd been in had been the first tight end taken. And Kyle Pitts got drafted first in that one in like a sixth round or something. So he's moving up. People are recognizing it, and he's getting first round buzz. I've seen in a lot of 2021 mocks, and he is an incredibly talented player, and he's going to be a guy that has the ability to make a huge impact at the tight end position, as big as you could hope for. Weidermeyer, I know he's going to get some, you know, his targets are going to get cut down if Baylor Cup is healthy, but he was their biggest big play receiver last year at Texas A&M, and he's a huge target. He did great things in the red zone. I liked his athleticism. He was more athletic than I expected, and I think he's going to get even better. So I think that he's worthy of a top 10 tight end spot, and I've been waiting. He's been my last pick the last three mocks I've taken, just because nobody's taken him.
Everyone's afraid because Baylor Cup's there, and you know what? There can be room for two tight ends. Not many teams, not most teams, but I think A&M, they run the ball so much they can run a lot of two tight end sets this year. But that is going to end it for us today. Remember, you can follow us on the Twitter at Bogman Sports for me, at CFB Winning Edge for Nick, and next week we'll be doing the Pac-12, right?
Right.
Pac-12 next week. So stay up for that, and we will see you guys tomorrow for the 3-hour show. So take it easy, everybody. Have a good weekend. Wash your hands. Do all the stuff, and we will see you tomorrow. Take it easy.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.